this tour's been going on for about a week now. And
this is the fourth day.
And we've been here for a month.
Yeah, and I think you don't get another day off until like 3 weeks from now.
Yeah.
How does that play for you guys? I mean, do you need those days off to sort of recuperate, or do you prefer keep going full blast all the time?
No. Well, with our band, they are usually more difficult because people just tend to drink more on the off days. And then it's even worse the day after.
Really?
We don't really need them.
I only need them for my voice.
Yeah.
I tend to blow out my voice after about 2 weeks because I sing quite hard. Because it's kind of melodic. I really should take more care of it than I do. So I try not to drink as much. A lot depends on how, you know, fit you are, the water you're drinking, or you're trying. Like, I had a cold for the first few days because the electrics in the bus didn't work.
Oh.
So slept in the draft. So of course everything is stuffed up, and it's one thing if you're just going, you know, but it's hard when you're trying to sing. So sometimes a day off can be handy, but it's up to you to be responsible if you want, you know. If you have to take a day off drinking, you have to take a day off, you know.
What do you do to stay physically and mentally fit while on tour? Because, I mean, I'm sure a tour could take us still physically, but I can imagine psychologically, especially when you guys are over in another country like this that you're not used to. I mean, how do you keep mentally and physically fit while on tour?
It's, of course, an individual thing for everybody. I'm probably the only one in our band who actually goes out to see the cities and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I try to get out from the venues just to see the local cathedral or museums or something.
There's plenty of bands that we toured with who they stay up till 8 a.m. drinking, sleep all day, and get out an hour before they play and roll out, play the gig, and they do the same thing every day over and over, and they never see anything. So it can be okay to wheel out to party at least for me, if you're going to drink every 3 or 4 days, but it's important to get out and try and look around the city, even if it's a shithole, to walk around for an hour or put your headphones on and just
exactly.
It's a kind of skill to find your own space on tour. Like if you're in an environment where there's, say, the Heathen Fest or the Pagan Fest in Europe, it's like 30, 35 people in the same place at the same time, you know, in two buses. And if you can't find your own space, even if it's with your headphones on, read a book when people are around you, you'll go insane. But you learn how to find that.
You mentioned, you posted online that you were looking forward to coming to the U.S. Now, I imagine you wanted to play here since you have only played one show here before a couple of years ago. But was the sightseeing and being around a new country and taking a look around this country have something to do with why you wanted to be here on tour? Or is it because it's like another land that you haven't conquered live yet?
Of course, it's all, you know, to be honest, life is short. Life is fucking short. Take a look around while you got the time.
That's what I want to do.
We're in a privileged position.
Exactly, that's true.
You know?
This is, in that sense, this is the best job there is.
Yeah. And from that point of view, you have to, every now and again, you have to just realize that yourself and go, here I am playing music that means something to me, regardless of what anybody else thinks about it, in another country to other people. You might not be being paid for it. It doesn't really matter because in the long run, you know, you're just going to have debts when you're dead, aren't you, anyway? So it's all an experience for me. So from that point of view, whether it's being in a bar like this and meeting random people or out seeing sights or something, it's somewhere different. And it's, some bands you tour with don't seem to understand that they're in a privileged position. They're always complaining, you know what I mean? They're always moaning about, why is the bus like this, and why is this, where is my this? And
well, on the flip side, either of you get homesick during the whole touring cycle? That after a certain point, you're like, I just want to get home.
Not really.
Yeah, there is a, during the longer tour, towards the end of it, you start thinking like, how I wish to be in my own bed for just one night. But then when you go home, it only takes like 4 or 5 days, and you start thinking, when does the tour start again?
Do you have kids though?
No.
Okay.
No,
I don't have kids either. For some of the guys who have kids, they're speaking on MSN and to their kids, you know, that video camera and blah blah whatever. And that's a different thing for them. For me, I'm always being kind of living different places, and
I don't have kids or family or, you know, even a girlfriend or anything like that, so everything is a bit different for me. I don't get that homesick.
Gotta make it easier, because I mean, I'm not even in a band, I don't tour, nothing like that, but just for me, I've got children, I've got a wife, and for me, I live a couple hours away and two states over. For me, coming to a show for one night, you know, that's hard. Just being away from my kids for one night, that's difficult. And for you guys, and for your bandmates who have children, I'll never understand it. I'll never be able to relate to it.
Yeah, but usually those people who just can't be away from their wives, girlfriends, or children, they just drop out from the band after a while.
Yeah. Or else our bass player isn't here. Our real bass player. He just has a 9-month-old kid, and he lives in the middle of nowhere, so he opted out. So we have a replacement guy, and now our other guitar player is coming today because he couldn't get into Canada. So it's, primordial is always a bit complicated to arrange, but there's the hardcore five of us. Probably there's the hardcore three of us who've been together for nearly 20 years. And around that, there's kind of like a slight extended family. But you either accept that or you do nothing, you know?
Your band has the model recently reissued. You've got some other old albums coming out, reissued. Who came up with the idea of putting out the old records, which have been hard to find for quite a few years?
Me. Are we just sick of people bootlegging them, old labels making money off us, never paying anything? Just tired of other people having the rights to our stuff. You're never getting your publishing, never getting your mechanicals. You know, just throwing the CDs out there. So we decided, okay, we're going to release them all, put them all in a box, a special box with a DVD from the time. Like, so Rama comes with a live show from 93 or 94. It's crap, but it's authentic. We weren't very good. We didn't even know what monitors
were. Well, anybody buying a Rama is not going to matter. They're not going to care if it's crap. They're going to want to see it.
It's 16 years old. Yeah. You know, I was 18 years old. So we were all teenagers. But it has a feeling, you know. And I think it's important for the few people who will buy it. And I wouldn't ask everyone to buy it who hasn't already. Try and make it something special. I mean, you have to in this day and age. You have to put something extra in, you know.
That's true. I actually, fans expect it. You get so much of it, you expect it, especially on a reissue. Now with your band, what have you released, like 12 albums in the last 2 years? Seems like every 6 months I keep hearing new single and then a new album coming out.
Yeah, there was this at one point. The previous record label was postponing the album release because it was going to be our last on them, and then they kept postponing it just to keep the merchandise rights for them for just a bit longer, because that was the deal, that after the last album is out, then they still have the 6 months for the merchandise. They were postponing the release because they wanted to get the money from the European summer festivals. And then while it wasn't even released, and we were already recording the next album. And so that's why they, it's like maybe 9 months between two albums.
Yeah, when I heard you had a new one coming out, like, already? I mean, it's like the 70s rock bands used to put out a record every like 9-10 months, you know? Yeah. It's kind of surprising.
AC/DC and Priest did two in the same year before.
Yeah.
Zeppelin
Kiss
did
in
it.
The 70s, two Sabbath. Albums a year, keeps coming out.
And Black Sabbath. Something that amazes me is that Iron Maiden did their first 4 or 5 albums all like one album a year, and that they still played like 200 shows every year, and they still managed to, you know, write music, record the album.
That's what you had to do. That was your lifestyle. Yeah. They were writing on and sound checking. It's crazy. And you think that, like, people complain now about not having enough time to record an album. Black Sabbath did the first album like half a day or something. It's obscene.
I read I'm a big Sabbath fan. I read on one book that their third album, Master of Reality, they went into the studio in the beginning of July, like 1st or 2nd of July, and it was in the stores on 29th.
Wow. And the first Black Sabbath album, they were on their way to France for a show in Paris, just playing as a demo band, and they recorded it on their way to get the ferry. for like 6 or 9 hours or something ridiculous on a Saturday afternoon, then got the ferry and played on Saturday night.
Yeah,
but the drum sound is better than any fucking drum sound on any bloody album now.
Yeah, sometimes I curse the whole idea of Pro Tools and studios, and it's like, you know, I
fucking hate it.
Yeah.
The amount of, if I hear another person say, oh, you know, this old albums from the 80s would sound better with proper drums. No, Welcome to Hell sounds, that's perfect. Inside of Evil, Obsessed by Cruelty.
I hate it.
Yeah. Routine, you know?
As much as I worship the altar of metal, there's so much of it that's so overproduced. And with this kind of music, that kills it. I mean, it takes away the spirit.
Yeah.
And it's like, why? Just, I mean, like you mentioned, Welcome to Hell. Exactly. I mean, can you imagine Venom with production? I mean, no. It just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
It just would not work.
And I also hate the current mastering process, what they do with the album.
To make it so loud, it's just they max out the frequency.
Yeah, and it takes out... I'm a bass player myself, but I love to listen to drummers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hear, for example, our drummer doing this really nice growing snare feel on the album. That is like really nice. And then when it's finished, it's like shooting with a machine gun.
Yeah, we mastered not the last album, the one before, The Gathering Wilderness, and it's quite a. Like an 80s master, 70, you know, it's got peaks and hollows in the music, and everybody complained when they put it on compilation CDs for the magazines. Oh, it sounds like shit compared to new In Flames or Meshuggah.
Yeah.
Because when you play the CDs and you register the frequency range, it's just complete. It's like a bar. That's not the one. But if you play Heaven and Hell, man, that's up and down. That's the way the music should sound. But now it's an iPod generation. It's in-ear phones. To make it so fucking loud as possible, you know? But I mean, I DJ in a bar, a metal bar, you know, at home, and when you play AC/DC or something, you get definition. You play a modern, extreme metal CD, it's you know, because it's meant to be in your bullshit.
I think it's all in how some bands want to define their music. Some bands want to sound, it seems like they want to have perfection. Perfection in their mind is the most expensive studio, you know, a name producer, because anything less, I've talked to some people and it seems like anything less than the most they can possibly spend means that they're somehow not aiming high enough, like they're not trying to achieve the most for their band.
A lot of bands also can't play.
Yeah, that's another thing.
You know, they cut and paste four bars because they can't stay in time, or they just play one bar, cut and paste it, and then do the next bit once and paste that, and they chop and up their songs on it, you know, and quantize it, and they don't actually, you don't have to be tight. In fact, you don't, I mean, we could be in the studio and I could trigger, there's the ride cymbal, there's the snare, which trigger the table, there's the bass drum, and I could go like this. I don't need a drum kit, there's your triggers right there. And you trigger them, and yeah, we've got a drum sound for fucking some brutal death metal band. You don't actually need to play anymore. Whereas in the old days, those bands needed to be fucking tight. You listen to some of those old thrash albums or something, Holy Terror. Holy shit, that's like, it's fucking tight.
Yeah, the Holy Terror. Yeah, I remember when I first heard the Holy Terror album, I was thinking, whoa. You know, mine was, I thought, you know, good record, but it was crazy, but it made sense.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, some of this stuff you can't imagine, like even your band. I can't imagine your band with like that high quality production.
No, I kind of like it a bit crap.
Yeah.
It has character, you know?
It adds warmth. You know, and, you know, if you listen to it on vinyl, I mean, that to me will define a band. If they sound like crap on vinyl, you know? That's what I liked about Old Merciful Fate.
Yeah.
Let's put that on vinyl.
Yeah. Well, that's a drum sound, man. Merciful Fate.
Now, and your band's got so much going on, I don't even want to imagine what it's like in the studio trying to record one of your records.
We haven't really been that satisfied with our drum sounds on the previous albums.
Yeah.
Because whatever we did, it always turned out to be the same flat.
Yeah, yeah.
And then now on this album, we recorded the drums in a different studio than the rest of the album. We booked like the best that there is, who have really huge room.
Yeah,
you can get the mics like 10 meters away from the from the drums.
We did our
and we paid a lot for just recording the drums.
Yeah.
And after all, it's all the same when we have the finished must. water on our hands, it still sounds the same again.
We did our last album in the studio owned by the guy from Hawkwind, the old bass player of Hawkwind.
Yeah.
He owns a studio in North Wales in the middle of nowhere. And so we had a huge, huge live room where we did almost everything live with a big, like, you know, the kind of the sound room up above the live room, looking down everything, nearly all live, all green and orange amps, a huge old 60s drum kit with the extended bass drum. You know, you put two bass drums together and make the kind of tunnel. But the bass drum had old analog compressors, and Motorhead had done like On Parole there, and all these bands from the 70s and 80s. And we did it in like 11 days and said, bollocks, just do it. Let's do it live. And nearly all of it is first take. Just to try and keep the sort of
feel. Before the Nameless album came out, you posted online about how the album was being recorded and how it was anything but a modern production. So I'm thinking, well, I thought the last album sounded pretty damn good, and I almost thought you were scaring people by like expecting it to sound, you know, expect a demo. The next album is gonna sound like a demo, and then when you listen to it, I'm like, it sounds fine to me.
Yeah, that's we threatened Metal Davis that it's gonna sound like Obsessed by Cruelty. That's good.
Sometimes crap recordings are perfect. Sometimes they're warranted. But then again,
can you imagine Dark Throne in proper production? I'd rather listen to Under a Funeral Moon just like.
You know, but on the flip side of that is that it seems to be like this movement, especially in the thrash genre, where people are purposely going for that crap sound, and they come across not sounding real or original, but like they're trying too hard to be something they're really, you know?
The bands in the 80s were doing the best they could. I mean, Sodom and Creator and Destruction, they were teenagers learning how to play. They were doing the best they could with engineers who probably never recorded extreme music before. Or it's all virgin territory, so they're doing their best. But what it was honest. I mean, if you're pretending to be like that, to me that's something that's a bit conceited, you know? I mean, you know, Dark Throne, for example, in the film, that sounds the way it does. I mean, that fits, that's perfect for that. But for the million bands that tried to copy that, going into a digital studio going, how do we get the Dark Throne sound, you know?
Yeah, it's like, if you think about the drum sound of John Bonham.
Oh,
that is the sound that's still like thousands of drummers want exactly that sound.
Ultimate, yeah.
And heavy, but live sound.
Yeah, and they recorded it always for the entire career of Zeppelin. They recorded it with just two mics.
Yeah, I'd say it. I mean, you know, what is it? Is it the fucking one year sound at the start? And that's like a mic at the top of the stairs? Yeah. On the stairwell? Like, you know the sound on British Steel, I think that's an amazing drum sound, Judas Priest, British Steel. That's recorded like in the middle of, they hired an old house and they put the drums at like the bottom of the stairs in the hall. Just put them, hung the mics over the gantry, and it's like rapid fire, it sounds amazing.
Oh, rapid fire, gotta love that.
I really like the drum sound on the fucking Mob Rules and Heaven and Hell though.
Love those.
I love Mob Rules.
Yeah, and Dead, Vinny Appice, early Holy, you know, the Holy Diver, Last in Line sound.
I actually like that the entire sound on Mob Rules. I think that is the best sounding Sabbath album ever.
If I could replicate that for Primordial, that would be
really
perfect. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what we did with the last album. We tried to do the toms from Killers by Iron Maiden. Yeah. You know and the fucking old Sabbath sound. You can never quite get it because they were spending like fucking tens of thousands. But we had a really old 70s compressor, really really old, to compress the drums. And as soon as we were its engineer was a bit young, and we're like, no man, come on, it sounds a bit too modern. So we fired the compressor and we like really pushed it, and it began to sound like, you know, like Overkill or something, Motorhead, you know, the start of fucking Metropolis. And, Metropolis. Stay clean. Yeah, you know. So that's what we're trying to do.
Have either of you had any label pressure on your production? Like they wanted you to sound like this or sound like that, or didn't approve of what you gave them?
Kind of, not really. You get that?
No. They actually, the previous album, that is actually now still the latest, but yeah. That was our first for Nuclear Blast, and I think they were expecting more of this really funny drinking songs on the album. They were not complaining about the sound, but I think they were expecting a little different album. I think that was a bit bit too dark album for them, perhaps.
Interesting you mentioned dark. That's the first word that came to mind when I first heard it. I'm like, it seems, to me, it sounds a little darker than the previous couple of records.
Yeah, it was. And they never really said anything about it. I just sort of sensed that. And then, at the same time, our friends from Switzerland, Elevated, they moved to a Nuclear Blast as well. And they released their album sort of at the same time. And we could see that Nuclear Blast was pushing them to everywhere.
Yeah.
And then, I will say that from a radio point of view, it's pretty clear that band was like a focus. I mean, they really put a lot behind them.
I think that Metal Blade knew exactly what they were getting into when they dealt with us. And that Neuromordial was always dark. It was always the dark underbelly of all of that. It was always grim and a bit gritty, and we came from black metal. So we had a completely different kind of perspective on it, attitude on it. And they knew you're not going to get an album every year. You're not going to get lots of tours. You're going to get this rather gloomy looking album cover.
And for those reasons, I'm surprised still to this day that the Primordial is on Metal Blade, because, I mean, granted, Metal Blade does have a wide variety of bands, but it's pretty clear their focus has been on whatever's hip at the moment.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised you're still putting out your
records.
That's
why we did it. To do the opposite of what everyone expected us to do. It would have been easy to go with Peaceville and sell 10,000 records and be there with My Dying Bride and blah, blah, blah. But we wanted to be on a bigger label with more push and more money, and they're good people as well. And also, to be able to be the band that sticks out like a sore thumb, always. And that's always been our intention, to go against the grain.
You kind of do stick out like a sore thumb on a level, you know?
I mean, we're kind of almost... Somebody said to me last year, we're like the anti-heroes. You know, because we just go against the grain and against everything in that sense. And I kind of like that. It's sort of Irish kind of attitude, you know? Maybe. I don't know, we always wanted to just make... When we were black metal, we didn't want to sound like Dark Throne or whatever. We always wanted to have the... I had this conversation, I haven't had it with you guys yet, but with Fintroll. And they were saying to me, well, you know, Finnish traditional music is often about drinking, and it has this dark humor, and it's quite uplifting in a sense, you know. Well, even if it has a sort of this dark humor to it, you know. Well, Irish traditional music is quite different. It's much more melancholic. It's much more sad, it's much more grim or something, you know? So we always, maybe you disagree, I don't know, but we always wanted to have the dark underbelly of that in our music, you know? So I kind of like the way we kind of stand opposed to the rest of the folk or pagan metal scene, you know?
Well, you mentioned that the Irish way is a little more sad and melancholy. I mean, how much of that is due to, like, say, the nature and the weather?
Well, lately, you're from Finland, you know, it's dark all winter.
That's my next question for him. Is that in Finland, the suicide rate in so many people, it seems like everybody drinks, and it's like your disposition has something to do with the nature.
But the Irish and the Finns are quite similar in that their relationship to the drinking culture. You know, when we toured in Finland, it's not the same as in Sweden and Norway. In Sweden and Norway, the people are a bit more concerned with their self-image. And they're a bit kind of standoffish. Finns, I find, they're a bit more sort of openly friendly, you know, more, but they drink, I think they drink more, you know.
I think the general idea in Finland is that in the culture or the history is that a farmer on 1800, he wakes up in the morning of June or July, and he sees that, oh fuck, there's 1 meter of snow from the last night, and so we are not going to eat it this year either, he thinks. But then he just thinks that, well, I might as well start drinking.
Yeah.
And because the children will die next winter anyway.
There's a sort of, I mean, I think that, like, yeah, there's a sort of dark humor to what, I mean, at least what I understand you guys do and what Fintroll do, for example, in the Finnish bands. For us, it's a little bit different, but I can sort of relate to it in some sort of way, you know? But, you want to go?
I can have one.
Why not? Yeah, go on. No, we have one.
Do you want?
Yeah, go on.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, primordial never really fits in. Doesn't really fit in, and I'm quite happy with that. You know, it doesn't really. You know, quite happy to be on any bill with people, and just everybody's into their own thing and stuff.
So you don't care who you're playing with?
Well, I mean,
I know you've been very vocal about like the kind of metal you like and the kind of metal you don't like.
Yeah.
So who you're playing with, it doesn't really matter if you're into their kind of music.
No, not really. It's more important to get along with them as people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It doesn't. We don't have to, you know, like each other's bands or music.
I don't like Coca Clandy, I'll be honest. I don't like the music. I might like it after 3 weeks, but I don't like it at the moment. But that's nothing to do with him or me. It's just a personal taste, you know. I listen to Blasphemy, for fuck's sake. What do you want?
the best band on the tour is Moosoro, if you ask me.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. You know, I'm glad you're not asking me who I think the best band is.
No, I mean,
it's tough. It's tough.
But that's not the point. The point is, I'm... It's not... You're in a sort of a group of people that have to live with each other for 3.5 weeks. You're going to tour with bands that you like music, bands you don't like music, also bands that you become fans of, that you weren't in the beginning, and people you have no idea of whatsoever. I mean, Swashbuckle. I thought it was going to be this horrible, kind of limp, running wild style Euro power metal, and they're playing like DRI and Cro-Mags and Numbskull and Crossover Thrash, and I was like, fucking hell, that's alright, you know? So it's nothing. No, I'm not a fan of any folk metal. I don't like any of it. You know, to me, it's all too jolly and too happy. But that's just my personal taste.
And having said that, I think Primordial is as much a folk metal band as any other band, like say on this tour. I mean, you don't have to have like say.
True meaning of folk, perhaps it is. Yeah.
Well, I mean, lyrically and spiritually.
Yeah, sure.
Every much is good. Absolutely. So. What I was concerned about when this tour first got announced, and actually even after, before and after you guys got added to the tour, was I thought it rather odd that actually once you were added and you were made headliner, that I mentioned Elevene.
It's just sad that they're not here. They're good.
I really wanted to see them, but I thought I don't understand how a band with one United States release, two albums total, gets second billing and therefore more playing time than Primordial and Moonsorrow, who've been around for a lot longer and have a lot more albums.
Well, there's a lot of politics about this.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought Clear Blast had everything to do with that.
I was surprised that we were headlining.
Well,
I was really surprised with that.
I think
about the Elevated having the second slot, I think they had a deal that they will be on the second slot. And when we got in, they had to still give them the second slot, so they pushed you to the first slot.
I mean, realistically, I'm under no illusions. I mean, Moonsorrow probably sells more than Primordial does in America. You guys definitely do. Moonsorrow probably sells more in Canada, the CDs, than the both of us do. I'm not sure, but we definitely shouldn't. We should probably be before Moonsorrow. But Moonsorrow didn't really want to play before us. And the way the agents, he thought it would be good to break things up a bit in that respect. So I think for the last three bands, it doesn't really matter that much.
Well, to me, it wasn't in this.
I think it's perfect that you guys finish, because you guys are the most popular, and that's what people want to see. And they have a bit of a sort of strange break for us in between, where they don't really sometimes understand what's going on.
Well, yeah, because they had more of the, they're not as folkish anymore, but they have definitely more of a folk metal sound than you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Who don't have that sound, then Connie comes on, who obviously has much more of the sound. To me, the problem was not the sort of higher.
I wish Elevator were here.
Oh, I do too. I want to see them. They're, absolutely.
Yeah, but they're not. I mean, I don't like the music, but they're brilliant people. They're a really nice bunch of people.
They're
good people, you know.
What matters to me as a band is the fact that when a band who has two albums out gets, you know, they're playing after you guys, that means it cuts into your set time. I mean, Moonsar and Primordial then gets less time on stage. That's what bothers me, because when am I going to get to see you guys next? It might be a long time.
Well, realistically, the tour probably should have been Elevator, Moonsar, Primordial, and Corpiclani. Just those four bands, with everyone rotating, or the first three bands rotating, us open some night, you guys finish. That probably, but there's politics involved between who manages who, who's on which label. Don't forget, we're all on different labels.
Yeah.
Some have more power than others, and you know.
Yeah, I
look who the first two bands are signed to.
That's what I'm getting at, is that I thought this was a nuclear blasting. And actually, if I'm not mistaken, Maurizio from Cataclysm is the one who was booking this tour anyway, and they're a nuclear blast band.
Yeah, but there, I don't know if you know that, but there is this connection between Rock the Nation and Nuclear Blast on a personal level.
Oh, I know all of it, yeah.
So,
you drew the conclusion there, but yeah.
But they, because they were trying to, when we made a deal with the Nuclear Blast, we agreed on that they will never, that Nuclear Blast, they will never tell us to do that tour, because we have to be able to make our own schedules for that. But they started to push us to USA and telling us that we have to work with Rock the Nation. And then at some point we realized that the manager of Nuclear Blast, whose name I can't remember right now, is close friends to the head of the Rock the Nation Europe. And so that's... But the thing, I think the real reason why Elevator is not here, that is money.
Yeah.
How are you?
Good.
Okay.
Good.
Hey,
how are you?
You all right?
good.
Stay for most of the flight anyway, so.
All right, cool.
So, yeah. It's a great band.
Ah, yeah.
Jordan?
Yeah.
Your favorite? They're really good. Really good.
For music, they're awesome.
Awesome. That'd be a great band to see on this tour. It'll never happen, but
very unlikely.
Yeah, it'll never happen.
No worries, Chief.
Yeah, how much time do we get for you guys tonight? What's your set time?
We have 40. Well, our set's about 47 minutes. They get an hour. It's always about an hour.
I always
45 minutes.
I don't actually know how long we have been playing.
You have an hour, but I don't know. I think we play about an hour, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, but it's not that long.
There's an awful lot of politics involved in it, at least from my point of view. To me, this is, like I said before, life is short. This is an experience for me. I have no interest in breaking the band. I could care less about recoup this or sales that or blah, 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 the other. From my point of view, we're being paid, albeit a small fee, to appear every night and play our music to people who've probably never heard it before. And if we can challenge, convert, bore people, whatever, I don't mind. It's all good for me, you know?
It's good for me, too. Three years ago, when you guys played your first show in the States and I was at the Heathen Crusade, I was so pissed off because I wanted to see Primordial, I wanted to see Moon Sorrow, and I missed it. I'm thinking, I'm never going to see those bands. There's no way they're going to tour the States.
We would never have let it rest without touring the States at least once. I mean, we've been playing together for 18 years. I mean, to
kind of why I was thinking, probably will never happen. Hasn't happened yet.
I mean, the end, who knows when the end will come, but if the end came and when I was 40 and I said to whoever, fuck, we never toured the States, I'd feel pretty fucking sad about that. So, to my mind, I mean, we're under no illusions. Primordial is not the band that most of the younger people want to see. It's not the band that excites them. They're curious about it. But it's not the band that they will instantly get because it's not an instant form of music. It's long, complex, dark, drawn-out songs. But that's okay. I think it's important for us. We're taking a piece of our culture, our history, our perspective on life and playing it for other people. And if they want to take the time and scratch the surface, they'll get rewarded with something different. And if they don't, that's okay. No problem. Move on to the next page.
I think you'll be surprised.
Doesn't bother me, you know? I don't mind.
I think you'll be surprised how many Americans are coming to the show to see you guys.
Because everybody is super enthusiastic. I've seen this. In Europe, we did a tour with this Heathen Fest, like the sort of sister tour of this or brother tour, whatever you call it, with Fintroll, and it worked really well because we brought the older people, the people with beards and battery shirts and fucking, to me, like metal people, whereas they brought the kind of teenagers, and so it kind of made a weird mix. But the average over 1,000 a night, same for Europe. Pagan Fest with Moonsong and stuff. So there are people out there, the epic, the Bathory people, the black metal people, and I think that that's what they're hoping we bring in. I don't know how that will work in America if those people still exist.
We exist. Trust me, man. We exist.
I'm absolutely sure that we will never sell a million albums.
No, never, ever. We're never going to be big bands.
Yeah, but the one thing that I would like to see is that we become a band like Motorhead is right now, because their albums
sell 50 or 60,000 worldwide.
Well, I think it's more than that, man.
No, it isn't.
You're sure it's more than that?
Mm. In Germany, they go gold at least. But I know what you mean. They don't sell as much as they used to.
Yeah, but anyway,
that's not really
they can still headline any rock or metal festival, and no one has nothing to complain about that.
Not just in Germany, but they don't even have to have a new record out.
I would like to think that were true, but I think the problem with for us bands of our generation is the era of classic bands is over. That the era of the classic album. The band who can tour, even for the death metal bands from 20 years ago, Deicide, Obituary, look at Obituary, can tour still from Cause of Death and Slowly Rot, and it's nearly 20 years ago now. We will never have that chance. I mean, we sell what, 25,000 records,
right, for Primordial.
Now, realistically, we're probably the musical equivalent of Bathory or Celtic, to me. But from the '80s, but those guys were selling 100, 120, 150,000 copies. I mean, there were shit thrash bands from the '80s who sold 40,000 copies. You know, I mean, we're fighting a losing battle releasing albums against downloading and the things, the relationship that young people have towards music now, that it's secondary to their phones or their computer games or their social networking sites. It's hard to compete when you're not a ringtone. You know what I mean?
That's a headline.
It is. So you're trying to make music like the stuff we grew up with, which is this classic life-changing metal. Like the first time you ever heard Iron Maiden or Maiden or something. I mean, that's what I'm trying to do. I don't, in some small kind of way, for a tiny amount of people that like, fuck, that really means something to me, you know? It's hard if you... I mean, I know bands who do that and they're selling 2,000 albums. 2,000 fucking albums. And they should be like... Hey, look at... Okay, perfect example. Sorry to keep rabbiting, but, you know, Slough Feg?
Yep.
You know this band, the Lord Weird Slough Feg?
Yep.
They're from here.
They've actually got a new record out now.
It's great. I let you hear it. It's like Thin Lizzy style 70s, really early Maiden, but very good twin guitar harmony.
Thin Lizzy is one of my all-time favorite bands.
Yeah. But really great. Great, great band. They've like 6-7 albums. They should be headlining back in, not Hammerfall. But they're not.
Hammerfall should be shot.
They're not, but they tour Europe and they stayed in my house twice and we put the shows on. There's 100 people there who love it. And like, they really love it, but they don't get what they deserve. Most bands don't, you know? But that's the sad nature of the modern scene, and that
music has become a background music.
Yeah, yeah.
No one. I remember when I was a teenager, I lived in a small village where we didn't even have a record shop or anything.
Yeah.
I had to take a bus and travel to the town where I live now, and you know, I have money like once a month to go there and buy like 2 albums.
Yeah.
And then I go home and I listen to them. I read all the small print all the corners of the.
Yeah, yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
And I still remember those albums. Like if I put on like Abigail by King Diamond, I can still I immediately remember every single note word on the album.
Yeah, yeah. But that's
what was life affirming about it. I mean, exact same thing. I used to get off the bus going to school 3 stops early to save like 40p every day. And at the end of maybe 2 weeks, you could buy one vinyl from that 30 or 40p you'd save. And you remembered like the fucking stain on the bottom of James Hetfield's sock on the back of Ride the Lightning.
Exactly.
The rest of your life. I can remember the times and the songs on Ride the Lightning. You know, you knew everything. And I just don't know whether... I don't know whether people know. I hope some people do it. I'm a cynic anyway, but I do meet people who do still do, but it's hard to know if some of the kids really have the same connection. I think a lot of metal, great metal is about sacrifice. You know, when you were a kid, a teenager, you had to make some kind of sacrifice to try and make the effort to be. You had to make an effort. You didn't just go click. Oh, and I have that click, I have that. I listen to that in a year, and you have like, you go click, and you have all of a sudden the entire Rush discography in like 2 minutes. How are you going to digest 30 years of Rush
exactly.
in like 2 minutes?
I mean, 20 years,
and I still don't understand it.
And you take maybe one or two songs from the whole catalogue of Rush, and you listen to them, and well, this is crap, I don't like this.
and they the variety of the stuff that they did. It's just so huge that
yeah, no, I can't
say anything about the band.
My uncle gave me a 2112 when I was about 11 or 12, and I didn't really understand it till I was in my 20s. Because I just wanted to hear, you know, underground death metal and Venom and Dark Angel stuff. But now, great, but that's taken 20 something years. I mean, who has the time to do that now? It's like,
well, what you said about saving money getting off of the bus. You know, I mean, when I started actually listening to metal for real instead of just casually, what I did was, when I would actually walk home instead of taking the school bus home, and my friends who didn't live near a record store, I would buy their cassettes for them with the understanding that I get to listen to it, I get to open up, I get to hear everything. Yeah. I didn't have any money, yeah. I didn't have a job, I was too young, but I could hear metal. That's how I discovered bands like, I mean, Metal Church, or even lesser known bands like Motorhead. Right. I bought those cassettes for them, and I got to listen to them, you know, before I had to give them away. You know, you do what you gotta do. And I think there are enough of those people still around today, older guys like us, and then the younger kids who are aware of the history of metal and who want to keep the spirit alive. I mean, it's a small number, but I don't think it's ever going to go away. It'll probably stay small.
I don't think it'll go away, but it's... Especially with the younger people, they seem to have such a very short attention span. If it doesn't work at a festival in 5 minutes for them to jump around to, it doesn't work. I mean, if you look back at 1994, 1995, popular bands who were selling over 100,000 albums were Tiamat, My Dying Bride, Paradise Lost,
a lot of the central media bands,
Anathema, Darkthrone, or whatever. They were, I mean, Tiamat, Wild Honey, that's quite a dark album.
That's an excellent album.
Can you imagine My Dying Bride, The Angel in the Dark River? The first song is 13 minutes long. That sold 120,000 copies, or whatever. Now that would probably sell 3 or 4.
Because
the kids don't have the attention span. Like, what the fuck is this? I want something in 4 minutes that gives me my... And, you know, that's a bit sad as well, you know? But I suppose it's inevitable, really, isn't it?
No, I mean, I think it's in cycles, really. I mean, I think that's why you see these trends come and go, like with the thrash thing that have been popular for a couple of years now. It's only because there was this time in the 80s when it was the thing. And now you've got kids who are almost younger than what could be our little brothers, but young. They know the history of metal. They want to experience it for themselves. So they're going to go listen to bands like Bonded by Blood or Evil or Mantic Ritual because they know about what happened 20 years ago. They want to experience it for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, we were in the bar in Montreal. Did you go to the bar afterwards?
The Met Hall.
Yeah. And the music was so fucking shit all night, like crap, real crap. And I went up to this girl and I said, "Is this is the folk metal night, right?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, you play fucking Bathory then." She was like, "What?" I was like, "Will you play fucking Bathory or Sabbath, even Skyclad?
Skyclad,
give me a break." And she was like, "What? You've just been playing endless." You know, or like, drum machine, you know, the same, like I have it, you know, the same, and I'm just, after about 3 hours, I was like, fucking hell, man, what, you know, can you play? She's just like, no. I said, will you play fucking AC/DC then? No, of course not. Alright, okay.
This is Montreal?
Yeah.
Wow, interesting, because I've heard Montreal in North America is one of the most
known
towns in North America.
I know it was, but it was their folk metal night, so this girl was determined to wheel out all the stuff, but she did. I said, what about like Enslaved or something, or Negura Bunjit or something,
She probably doesn't know the Viking era of Bathory, you know, the 4th, 5th, and 6th record.
That's
where it comes from, you know?
That's where we come from.
Exactly.
Bathory, Hammerheart style, showed us we could mix culture with epic metal in a dark way. And that was the template that we took from with Frost and Venom and stuff like that. It showed us, okay, you can make big, epic sounding music, clean vocal, whatever. And then this girl is playing me like, I don't know, some drum machine bedroom fucking shit, and she doesn't even know Bathory. I don't really understand it.
She's probably just young and doesn't know the history, you know, it could very well
be. That's kind of what we're talking about.
Well, so I'm a bit of a prick anyway, you know? I'm a bit of a fucking asshole.
Trust me, man, right? I want to hear that too, and that's probably why I got into Primordial in the first place. I actually didn't get into the Your Band until Storm came out, and I detected the Bathory feeling there, and that's... I kind of judge so many extreme bands based on Bathory, because they were my first extreme band back in the late 80s. I'm like, wow. I mean, I never heard, I mean, even with the thrash, it was not the same until I heard Bathory.
No, Bathory was different.
Just so revolutionary.
I remember when Blood for Death came out, walking into the record store and just seeing the cover, I was like, holy shit, look at that, that's different. And then you open the inside and they were like, with the swords and stuff. And then we saw in Dublin, you know, Sabbat. The English Sabbat in 89, and it was the first band we'd seen who all had, like, you know, sort of leather and gauntlets and eyeliner and swords and fucking maces, and they were like thinking about pagan stuff, and we were like, three of the old three guys in the band, we were there like, holy shit. It was the first band we saw that didn't have like jeans and t-shirts and a Metallica shirt or something, and it really made a huge influence on us. We were like, oh, that's what we want. I would like to try and do, you know, something like that, you know.
To me, Bathory, I mean, some people went to Venom or Maiden or whatever. I think Bathory, you got to include, like, if you name five bands in metal that had such a huge impact on the entire scene, you can't leave out Gorthon's music. Because it reaches so far beyond just black metal.
If you did, you wouldn't have Immortal or Enslaved or Dark Throne or us.
I mean, you wouldn't have this tour that you guys are on now without Bathory. That's how I feel.
I don't know. Did Bathory an influence on Corporate Cladding?
Well, we were actually at one point thinking about covering one of their songs. So I guess there is something there. Yeah.
Now, since you've got a new album coming out, I think this summer, right?
Yeah, in the late June.
Are you playing new songs on this tour?
Yeah, we have been playing one or two of them, depending on the night.
Are you covering all your albums with your set list?
I don't even know from which albums the songs come from. I have no idea.
What about, how does the reissues affect your band? With their set list?
I mean, our songs are between 6 and 10 minutes long. We're 45 minutes, we're 6 songs. So we've played usually 4 new ones, maybe 2 old ones. We change a bit, but we can't play stuff from their first albums and stuff. We don't have the time.
Have you ever considered creating a medley of old songs? Like maybe like a 10-minute drama set? Because
no.
I mean, they're going to be people finding out about your band with these reissues.
No, I could never. I think it would be. I remember when Metallica did that once. I went to see them in the mid 90s, and they played a medley of
Justice.
I was like, oh. You know, like Phantom Lord into No Remorse, and like, no. Not that that's remotely similar, but no, I couldn't imagine clipping bits of songs.
But I like the idea when Rush did that. As the opener, I saw them in 2004, and they opened with this about 10-minute medley of their stuff that they never do.
Really? That's cool. I mean, if you have 30 years to draw on, I guess.
Yeah, and of course the songs have to be songs that everybody recognizes, and you know, it works quite well.
I mean, I believe you, if we played a song from Rihanna tonight, it would be like 10 people who get it. There's like,
so I guess Here I Am King's not on the set list tonight?
We haven't played that in probably 15 years.
So tonight's not a good night to break that one up, but I guess.
In fact, I don't know if we even played it back in the days.
Child Player hated it for some reason. I don't know. I mean, if you know, you've got 45 minutes, 6 songs, long songs.
So you're going to focus on the latest record, the previous one, right?
Yeah. Probably, but we tend to make up the set list sometimes as we go along. We've been playing the same songs for the last few days, but we might play something different tonight.
Any of you guys doing covers?
No.
No interest in doing covers now?
No. We haven't played a cover. We played one cover in the last 15 years.
Really? That's it? Wow, what was it?
We played Chemical Warfare.
We did get it. Oh, nice choice!
One of my favorite bands.
You guys ever play covers live?
Well, we did, on one tour we did, Iron Fist.
Left Fist, cool.
I'm overhead.
So I used to do lots of covers in the early 90s. You know, Venom, old, Morbid Visions. You know, Venom and fucking Sepultura and old Death, you know, Infernal Death and stuff like that, but We did the Antichrist Slayer at a Metal Blade 10-year party before. It was funny, like, all the bands had to do an old Metal Blade song, and we thought, everyone's going to pick Slayer, but we couldn't get to rehearse before the show in Germany, so we just... We all knew the Antichrist already, so we just kind of played it off the cuff.
Yep.
Everyone else did like 6 Feet Under and Volkswagen and stuff. They were like, this is a classic 6 Feet Under song. And we're like, classic 6 Feet Under song?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And they weren't to go in the same sentence.
And I was like,
but you know, Metal Blade, you have like Cyril Dungal, Trouble, Slayer, Kill 'Em All,
Fate's Warning. I know,
yeah,
all this Voivod
record. I know. Voivod, War and Pain, we were talking about doing. Like, oh, the DRI. I said to the Modern Art guys, you did 6 Feet Under, and I know Ollie loves DRI. I said, DRI, and he was like, fuck, DRI, and I was like, come on, man. Even In the Sound of Evil was released by Metal Blade in the USA. Sodom, Blasphemer. No, they all did 1995 album stuff. I didn't know the sound. And I swear, when we played that, we played the Antichrist, the first few rows went insane. The last couple of hundred people were like, we play with the Monomath, and I said that was
Slayer. You gotta train the young lads.
I was like, that was the Antichrist by fucking Slayer, by the way. And they were like, how can you, that should be in your DNA. How do you not know that?
I don't know. I told him it should be in the DNA. But again, you say you're a cynic, and
I'm a cynic, but sure, I'm always, I never pretended not to be a bit of a pain in the ass, you know?
Well, I'm just hoping that the tour will prove to both of you, this tour of the U.S., that throughout everybody's perception of the USA abroad, I mean, we may be a small metal community, but we're still here, you know? I mean, we're still, like I said, I'm married, I've got kids, I've got two jobs, and yet I'm still listening to my old vinyl. I don't forget where I come from, and there's still plenty of us out there, and I still meet young kids who are still that way, too. And I know the history, and they're trying to keep the spirit alive.
Yeah, no, I mean, no, I think everybody's fairly open-minded. You know, for me, it's just an open experience. It's like an open fucking book. You write a bit every fucking day and whatever. And to me, it's just all, like I said, I think the best thing that whatever you're going to bookend your interview with is, because life is fucking short. Take it for what it is.
Yeah, so, and I got an opportunity to talk to you, I'm all over it. I mean, geez, I'll drive out here 2 hours just to talk to you guys, hell yeah, and see a good show. Because again, I never thought I'd see Corbin Plenty or Primordial.
That, the thing is that it is a good show. The whole night is a good show. I think
I've been honestly surprised with the two opening bands.
Yeah, yeah.
The local bands. I think they have been, well, surprisingly good.
Yeah, I think it's five quite different bands, and it has been a good, strong show, and everybody seems enthusiastic about it, and no problem, you know?
Cool. Well, I've taken